for you. There's just been an upheaval in the Steelworkers Union. We just got through doing negotiations with them. And McDonald, who's big, you know, big time, like Washington figure, and drove around in limousines and everything, he'd been booted out because the rank and file didn't think he was more interested in national politics than he was in the union. And they put in a fellow named I.W. Abel, had risen up. They put and booted out McDonald, and along with him went two or three of the higher people. And amongst the ones that got booted out was the guy that primarily did negotiating for the Steelworkers Union, Marvin Miller, who was making like $18,000 or something at the time. And this executive said, this guy's really, he's a good man, he's really fair, he really knows his economics, and he's really a good negotiator. I mean, he's really staunch for the union, but he knows what's going on, and he's a good negotiator, and he knows how to deal with people, and he might be a candidate for you. So then Roberts goes down to he went down to Washington, visited the head of the U.S. Mediation Board. At that time, it was a fellow named William Simpkins. And I had gone, Bill Simpkins, his son, was an attorney brother of mine at Swarthmore. So anyway, he goes down to talk to Mr. Simpkins, and Mr. Simpkins says, hey, I know a guy that might be useful for you. There's just been an upheaval in the Steelworkers Union, and there's this fellow named Marvin Miller, who's a real good negotiator, if that's what you want, who's available. He's out of work. So we come to the meeting, and this is like 65, January 65 or something. And discuss this thing, and the person say, yeah, well, I guess it does sound like a good idea, and have somebody have a full-time player association, and various candidates, and there were several candidates, some of the really lawyer from Detroit or something, the Detroit people wanted, and Miller came, and Roberts mentioned Miller's name in this story, having heard about him twice, and Judge Cannon, who everybody knew, was pretty much the favorite, and I figured he'd get it. So they went through all the names and everything, took a vote, and vote came. There were like, I'd say, I guess it was like 24 player representatives at that time, and it comes out like 11 for Cannon and like 7 for Miller, and then one or four or five other guys got like one vote or something. So then we're sitting there, what do we do? And I mean, normally you get Robert's Rules of Order or something for this. But this now, I mean, is Cannon the winner because he got the most votes? Or does somebody need a majority? So we discussed this for a while. And I mean, no major thing. We said, well, let's have a runoff to two of them. That way we're sure we'll have somebody with a majority. Okay, that sounds good. I mean, run cash. Miller, the other six, Cannon gets 11 votes again. Miller gets like 13 to 11. Nobody knew who he was or anything about it. And my feeling, you're going to pay a guy $50,000 to negotiate once every five, work two or three months every 5 years, hire an assistant for $35,000, have an office in Park Avenue in New York. I said, what a waste of money. But Robert's got, he makes lots of money, and a lot of these guys make enough money. And we've been putting $2 a day into the pension, and they were going to give the $2. Baseball said, okay, you can have the $2 to go to your association, figuring Cannon was going to get in, I discovered later. And that was enough, that generated 100-something thousand, enough to pay all this. And so all of a sudden, Cannon gets in. And nobody knew much about him, but suddenly he got in, and he just turned the whole thing on its head. And I figured $50,000 is way too much salary, but what's the average football salary now? $400,000 or something, and it was higher than baseball. And so, had Miller not got in, I figured that and baseball had stayed the way it is, the salaries might be $300,000 a year would be average salary, and now it's like a and it's primarily Miller. So Miller's responsible for like $1 million per player for that salary. There's what, 700 players? So the present day players have Miller to thank for $700 million a year. I said, wow, the 50,000 doesn't look so bad now.
You think with his contributions to baseball that Miller should be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, really. I mean, as far as
but he won't.
I mean, but it's not it's not in the same sense. But as far as in fact, Ricky, I was mentioned before, and he finished with him really. He brought in Jackie Robinson, which changed things a lot. But he also introduced the batting helmet. 55. There's a Pittsburgh picture around it. Shows the batting. And he wore them in the field too, because up until about 56 or so, you left your gloves on the field. And a lot of people don't realize this, but saber people would know this. But you just left, like your shortstop or something, you just flipped it out in short left field. The pitcher, you drop it halfway between foul territory, between the foul line and the dugout. And they just left the gloves there. And they didn't interfere. I mean, maybe every once in a while something, a ground ball base hit would hit him, bounce off his head or something. But it didn't affect it any. But somewhere like 56 or something, the powers that be said, well, we ought to get rid of the gloves off the field. It looks bad. But meanwhile, Ricky had figured out that a lot of hitters become gun-shy. If they get hit or they're gun-shy anyway, he said, I think batting helmets would work. They used to use liners some, but I mean, it wasn't macho to use helmets. That's the way it was, no helmet. So he started, made everybody wear the helmet, and because the gloves were in the field, you wore the helmet out in the field also. Then when they brought the gloves into the dugout, then you had to go to the dugout and get your gloves. So right away the guys figured out, oh, I can just leave the helmet in the dugout. I can leave my soft hat with the glove. But it was funny. Ricky started out with Pittsburgh. Soon they get traded. And he had a little factory down under the Forbes Field, down under left field, behind left field foul line, back under there. And he made these helmets, and the guys would get traded, and the first thing they'd do would call him, hey, go to the Phillies, can you send me a red helmet? And I mean, it spread like wildfire, and changed things up. He changed the minor league system. This business, he was with St. Louis? The farm system is his innovation. Up until then, like the old Orioles was a good example. They had an independent thing, and they'd sell off Babe Ruth or somebody once a year and made money off it. And I think there were working agreements to a degree that, oh, I know this guy, and they'd send him down there. But primarily the minor leagues, just each minor league would have its own players, and they're good to hire a minor league team and buy them, or the major leagues would buy them. And Ricky said, I think you're better off, and he started with St. Louis, he had a ton of minor league teams. He put his own manager in there to put his system of how players should be developed, and he'd have these big tryout camps. He'd have 300 kids would come into Joplin, Missouri or something, and he'd sign like 20 of them and send them out to the minors, and you know, you'd have all these prospects, and sure enough, he started, he built up St. Louis, and the same thing with the Dodgers, and spring training too, he revamped that, where he'd have one big camp, and he'd strings and teach them sliding and all other innovations and all the other things that he had. And he really, the current farm system is his own. That was his doing.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you quite well.